What's up, Homicidal T-Hawk fan? This is your girl Kazen and Lou talking about our nightly T-Hawk TV for The Walking Dead. We're going to be talking about episode 13 of season 6, The Same Boat. So just talking about really going in depth on Carol versus Paula and Maggie versus Shell. So Lou, what was your initial reaction to the episode?
I thought this was a very, very well written episode. It's dialogue driven. I like dialogue because I think dialogue are some of the most character building moments. I like how it really, really focused in on Carol and Maggie by having them look at basically doppelgangers of themselves, and how in the entirety of the episode is largely focused on female characters. There's Rick on a walkie-talkie, and then there is one male with them, maybe two. If there was a second, then that's how peripheral males were. And I really like the development of female characters, in contrast to how me and Wilson keep saying some other shows we watch not doing their female characters justice. Real powerful episodes, and we can almost abide this one like how we normally do JJ, Jessica Jones, and do it by character, focus on Maggie and then focus on Carol.
Right. I definitely do agree with what you said about just focusing on the females for the episode, in contrast to a lot of the other comic shows that are out there. So we can go ahead and get started on Maggie and her doppelganger, so to speak. How are you feeling about their interactions?
Maggie in general was so cold and so hard in this episode because she's carrying a child. And, you know, we were sitting here a week ago like, why the heck did they bring Maggie on this mission? Maggie's with child. And like 30 minutes into this episode, I was like, okay, Maggie, we get it. You could defend yourself while pregnant. No, don't know if it's the best idea, but you just bludgeon somebody's head in with a blunt end of a gun, so I'm going to say you could handle yourself. But Maggie's interactions with Shell were really crazy because, in contrast to the other interaction, Shell momentarily is humanized by the fact that Maggie is pregnant. And the crazy thing about Maggie is she wasn't even going to tell them she was pregnant. Carol did that. And it sets up a really interesting dynamic. So when Shell finds out she's pregnant, she's like, ah, she probably knows something. Let's find out what she knows. I don't know why I didn't think of that before. I think that was a logical reason for her to be able to get Maggie out of the room to converse with her, because she knew she was pregnant.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think that was her wiggle room for them to get outside and get alone and really talk about her past, Shell's past, and her saying, yeah, she was pregnant before and she would do anything for her kid too. So kind of trying to get Maggie to do anything for her kid as well to get her out of the situation. But learning more about Shell and about how she was very family oriented and how she had really strong feelings for her father, making sure that her father was a big part of her life, and really just is very similar to Maggie in that sense. Maggie and Herschel were very, very close while he was still alive, and she still does hold him very near and dear to her heart.
So to give listeners a little tidbit about Paula, if you don't remember, Paula has a ring that she wears on her pointer finger because she is missing half of her pinky finger. She lost half her pinky finger for stealing gas from the safe house that they're out in order to go find her boyfriend and tell her she was pregnant. She didn't even know her boyfriend very well. Nor did she like him. She says he's a dick. And she's ready to go ahead and tell him because the fact that she was pregnant changed everything for her. She writes Frankie on her arm because her dad's name was Frank. So, you know, in a very short amount of time, you can see the different ways that they connect. As Kaizen said, it's very well written, where they give you snippets of her life where you can see and that they are very similar in a lot of ways. And if you look at the beginning of the episode, Shell is very cold toward them before she finds out. I think Shell sees in Maggie a turning point where maybe her life might have went different, where the baby almost saved her from survival mode, but the baby didn't even work out for Shell. And so she's trying to get Maggie to say, hey, we're trying, this is the way the world is now. Tell us where your camp is. You'll pay us in supplies like everybody else does. I want you to keep your baby because you're in your nice baby making clothes, which is a weird phrase to say, but she meant like she was well dressed. So since they were well off, they could worry about having babies because they're not in survival mode. And it's crazy because it's like for a moment, Maggie saves her, but Maggie still walks out of there like, we gotta kill everybody before the end. And it's like, to Maggie, she was almost preaching to the choir with the humanity because Maggie has such a grasp, but it's hard for Shell to see that because Maggie right now is in like, I gotta take everyone out to protect my child because that's the way we're gonna roll.
Right, right. I think their interaction was great. It was a great to see someone else on the opposite end, opposite spectrum of Maggie as far as where they end up. How do you think, I don't know if this was actually talked about in Talking Dead, but how do you think that affected Maggie seeing someone that was so similar to her end up on another side?
I think Maggie, and how Maggie differs from Carol in this episode, she sees it and it's all cool and dandy for her, but like, she's got a baby to defend. For us as viewers, it's like, dang, Maggie is one kill baby away from being this cold and being like, we do what we have to do to survive. It's me, myself, and I. So the part that I feel like really affects Maggie is when she starts talking more about Rick Squad's actions toward the Saviors as a whole more than the reflection. But Maggie does definitely see it, and she acknowledges it when she sees it because, you know, she loves Glenn, and when she asked the question, was Frankie your boyfriend, she really cares because Maggie's character growth through the series is very strong too. What I like about her and Glenn is that they both not only seem to have found each other, but they both found purpose in the apocalypse. You know, you talk about the closest of Maggie and Herschel. Maggie was the perfect farmer's daughter. She had an older sibling who was married and was probably moving out soon. You had Beth, who was at the time an angsty teen, and Maggie, who stuck around with her dad, who was in long-time mourning of losing his wife. So, something that really resonates. So Maggie now has found her own purpose. She's found a way. She's found a right. So it's like the Frankie thing is almost like, ah, I see you how I am now. And then she's like, nah, not really. So the response from Shell says, I'm not how you are now, but I was how you were before the fall.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Is there anything else that we need to talk about with Maggie and Shell?
So, the important interaction last day in reference to the group, that's different, where she looks Maggie in the eye and it was like, after she makes the offer, she's like, look, you're not the good guys here. Which I think is something even scarring, because up to the point, you don't really question Rick Squad's actions, and they want basically like mercenaries in there on first strike to take out Negan. So, they're not the good guys in this situation. Even if they think it was inevitable, the preemptive strike says that they made a first move towards someone who had not yet committed a crime. And it's a different take for X. Y. That's something I probably never had to question before. Because people in Woodbury and Terminus were definitely in the wrong. Other places they stopped through, they went and saved people. They had their three questions. Everybody got a chance. But the Saviors, they marched up in their place and just started taking people out left and right. And they don't even know who the guy was. Like at the end of the last episode, where they're like, which one do you think was Negan? I'm like, bruh. So you're not even sure if you got the guy. And you're just that. You've got that much confidence and bravado where you're like, it's good. So I think that perspective to Maggie, that's what took her back the most. Not that it was someone like her, that she's not sure that her group acted in the right, which in past times she was always sure her group was acting in the right. I think also talk to Maggie about having a choice, where she talks about she made a choice, because it's not actually something that Maggie says to Shell, it's something she says to Paula before Paula kicks her out of the room, where Paula is like, you decided to have a baby in this world where all that's important in this world is to remain standing. And Maggie's like, no, that's all that's important to walkers, survival. We're people, we have a choice, and I made a choice to move forward as a person and have a baby with the guy that I love. I think that's a very important statement. It's something you've heard since we started on this, where I'm like, people are stuck in survival mode right now, and there's gotta be more to life than just surviving. And Maggie recognized that, and she's like, look, I saw that, and I think we're no better than walkers if we stay in survival mode. So I made a choice to move toward regaining my humanity. So between her choice to regain her humanity, how badass she is when she has to be, and how they're not necessarily the good guys. Maggie has a pretty clear path and resolve, but what's going on with her resolve is something we got walked through this week.
Yeah, definitely. I think that we got a really good walkthrough of how Maggie's mindset had definitely changed over these past seasons. When did she come on, the second season?
Yeah, season two, she was on the farm.
So definitely being able to trace the progress that she's made as a character and her development, it has been awesome. And that was one of the key moments for this episode for her. And one of the things you said was how, Shell was like, you guys aren't the good guys. And Paula kind of touches on that too a little bit when she's talking to Carol.
Yeah, so between Paula and Carol, Paula is like, hey, look, you guys attacked us first. And Carol is on some, that's not true. Your guys attacked our guys on the road. And so we took care of them. Paula's like, okay, that's cool. Self-defense. That's what happened to whatever the guy's name was. She said his name. But you proceeded to come to our hideout and take us all out. So don't play innocent with me. There's something else going on, and Carol's just stuck. So Paula and Carol, are the other half of the episode, and their interactions are crazy deep because, I guess what I want to say early on before we dive into it is, Carol now reminds me of how we found Michonne, where she's in a life transition and flux of high entropy. And I think killing the alpha wolf snapped her out of survival mode. And I explore that a little more once we get into these interactions. But it's the first time we see in Carol's mind in a long time, because this is the first time I think she's been inside her own mind in a long time.
True, I definitely think this is the first time that Carol has, or the first time in a while, I should say, that Carol has actually thought about her actions in depth. Like, she knew what she was doing before, but, you know, ever since the list started, and ever since she's been paying more attention to the list, it definitely made her stop and reconsider, and we talked about that in last week's episode. So I'm gonna go ahead and start off with this. I know that we were talking in our group chat about how people were mad about Carol the entire episode. I was just confused on what was going on, and I was one of those, oh, what is Carol doing? Is she just faking right now? Is this her mindset right now? Is she really scared? And then when I saw her, you know, get out of the tape that they put there, I was like, okay, this is what I was waiting for. So I will go ahead and say that disclaimer right before.
Yeah, I totally wasn't one of those people, because I was like, I get it. The hyperventilating was a little much. I never thought it was fake, though. I thought it was a bit much, but when they tie them up and throw them in a room, Carol starts hyperventilating. And she has some rosary, which now I want to go back and watch other episodes of The Walking Dead and see if Carol has had this rosary and it's just been in the background or some crap. Because she makes an effort to grab it and put it in her pocket, and she uses it to console herself and calm herself down. But Carol is not in survival mode right now, but she's not in a live mode either. She's in flux, and she's very unsure of how to proceed and how to move forward. And something interesting is that it's not just Paula who's a reflection of Carol, but I think in a way Maggie is too. And that's why Carol is so defensive of Maggie's child, because her daughter was her world, and her world, her old world, I guess, ended when Sophia died. Or when she found out Sophia died, because Sophia was dead a long time before we saw her. So to see Maggie have a chance, not even at a life she had, but maybe possibly a life better than she had, because Glenn's a good guy and Carol was with an abusive asshole. I think that has some weight on how her mind is now. There's the whole, we don't know how the alpha wolf would have been. That weighs on her life now. And then something important, I think, too, is Sam. You know, last episode we saw her leave Acorn beat Cookie on Sam's grave, which shows that she feels some guilt and responsibility for Sam's mental trauma and death. If you remember what she says to Sam when she goes on that rant, because that week I watched a rant because I was like, oh, that's what traumatized Sam. She says to Sam that we kill to keep from becoming monsters, which in a physical sense is true. You kill to keep from becoming monsters in the way that walkers are monsters. But once you start killing people, I think in a way, Carol feels like a monster herself. And yes, she wanted to be strong. Yes, she has developed into a strong person from someone who was a battered wife. But she never wanted to be a monster. And now she's like, when is it right? How do I stop being a monster and keep doing what we need to do to survive? I don't want this. And she's got that weird flux going on.
Right, she definitely does have that. She's in limbo right now, trying to decide, trying to figure out where she wants to fall, and trying to see, okay, everything that I've done, is it okay? Have I gone too far, like you just said? So with these interactions with Paula, how does it change or help her come through to her final decision of getting out of limbo and choosing this is okay because we are still trying to survive right now?
I still don't think she's chosen. But what Paula did was allow her, I think what she knows is that she doesn't want to be Paula, but she also knows she doesn't want to be pre-fall Carol either. So she's trying to find a balance, but I think Paula showed her that she didn't want to be Paula. The question, which is really trivial probably, is as a viewer, is deciding whether or not she was two steps away from becoming Paula before she hit the state of flux, or if Paula is where she was 2 months ago. Because this is just, let's not forget, Carol threatened a child and went ham and killed without prejudice by herself 7 wolves. Came up on Terminus. Like, we knew Terminus was a place full of cannibals. She didn't know what was going on Terminus. She just knew her friends were held up there and was like, bam, blow up that gas tank. Aw, boo, there's a candle woman. Boom, let's kill her too. And then apparently those 3 people that we didn't see that she killed off screen, they're the candle woman. So,
right.
Paula is very much the same way, where Paula, at the beginning of the episode, when they're on walkie-talkie with Rick, if old boy didn't need his arm healed, she was like, man, you're lucky we don't kill you right now, because I really want to. Paula is 1000% survival mode. And pre-fall Paula, her husband and child were everything to her. They were so much to her. Like, I want to see an episode, if Fear the Walking Dead did an episode for Paula, even 2 episodes, from the time she shot her boss to the time she became a savior, I would watch Fear the Walking Dead. In fact, I should add the Walking Dead writing room and tell them to do that. Because Paula was working in D.C. when the fall happened, and they told everybody in D.C. to wait where they were. And Paula had a dick of a boss. Like, she didn't like her boss at this moment, but it seemed like she never liked her boss, who, she was a secretary. Her boss made her, she's probably overworked and underpaid, but she was overworked and underpaid so that she can go home to her four daughters and her husband and help provide for them. And now the fall happens, and they're like, stay where you are. And she's like, no, I'm leaving. And her boss is like, I'm going to keep you here. And she's like, you better step aside or go meet your creator. And he made his choice, so she made her choice. So she killed right away. And her first kill wasn't even a walker. Now, even Ranger Rick, his first kill was a walker. It was a little girl walker, actually, way back episode 1. Paula's shift happens a little differently, and her justification was, I'm doing this for my family. So to return and then have no family, her world is rocked. But the way she describes how she was, where she was kind of timid as a secretary, she let her boss run her around any which way, she's very similar to how Carol was before the fall, with the importance of family and the self-assertion. And then she's very similar to Carol after the fall, where she's like, survival is what's important. We do what we need to survive. Which, now that I'm thinking about it, Carol being as complex a character as she is, I wonder if Rick helped push that mindset along when Rick kicked her out of the group. So, I don't know if you remember, but season 3, Carol was jettisoned from the group after she killed Karen and, I think his name was David, the 2 sick people.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, she was out there by herself for a minute too, which might add to it, but Yeah, her and Paula were very similar before, very similar after. Where Maggie and Show were very similar before, some similarities after. Paula and Maggie seem like they've been on the same ride of sorts in a way.
Yeah, I definitely I didn't forget about Kale being kicked out, but that I definitely think that it drove Carol to just survive more because she was out there by herself, and really she had no one else to really turn to. It was just survive or die, and there was a part after the fall that Carol was still the same as she was before the fall, before her husband died, and before her daughter died too. That transition for Carol happened a little bit later too, so that's another difference between her and Paula, because Paula, like you said, she got back and she had no more family. She was fighting for her family. So that's just something else to point out between them. Yeah, I definitely think that their interactions help. I don't really know, like you said, I don't know if she's completely out of limbo, but I think that it's pushing her to really see, okay, this is who I want to be, or this is where I want to go, or this is exactly who I don't want to be. Like you said before, she doesn't want to be Paula. She doesn't want to be this ruthless person that only cared about survival. Yeah. I know a lot of people on Twitter last night were saying, do you think that Morgan has gotten to her?
He did in a way, but she's in no way Morgan. Morgan's on an absolute people shouldn't kill people, at least without conversing first. Like, I think Morgan thought if he went and tried to make peace terms with the saviors and then they didn't, then you can kill him. But the chance at humanity, is always a thing for Morgan, so I think Morgan did get to Carol, but it's in no way is she Morgan. In no way does she have the "I'm not gonna kill another person" rule. But it sent her back into a state of flux. When she killed the wolf, and probably after talking to Denise and finding out that the wolf might have been coming around, and when Morgan, her interaction with Morgan, when she was like, "I should have killed you." And Morgan was like, "But you couldn't, could you?" I don't think it was like, "You couldn't, could you, because I would beat your ass." You couldn't, but like, "You couldn't because you're not that cold a person."
Yeah, I don't think that they got to. I don't think that Morgan changed her mindset that much. I definitely think that, it made her think about more things. It made her think about how she got to where the point she is. But in no way, shape, or form is she another Morgan. I don't think that was ever the plan that the writers wanted to go in either. I feel like their interaction with Morgan did exactly what it should have, which is made Carol question how she got to where she is.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans are still stuck in survival mode themselves. So
Me included.
it's either you're with Carol or you're with Morgan, and Carol's not Carol anymore, so she must be Morgan. It's not as simple as a dichotomy right there. There are opposite ends of a spectrum, but there is a spectrum. So the fact that Carol is questioning a return to humanity, I think, it's something important to note. Something else interesting, I think, when you talk about the difference between Carol and Paula. Carol killed Ed before he was reanimated. That's not on her list of kill. I said Paula. Darn it. Carol killed Ed before he was reanimated. That's not on her list of kills. And you would say she doesn't count kills of inevitable death because they're about to be reanimated, but the first name on her list of kills was Lizzie and Micah's dad. So I'm just gonna ask if you want to try to make sense of that.
Let me think about this. I'm not entirely sure why what would cause her to put their dad on there and not not Ed, but I think it's also because I think it might have to do with who she felt bad for too, because she didn't necessarily want to kill their dad. She knew that she was gonna have to take care of these girls now, having to play the role as another mother figure again. Was she ready for that? So I think that it might have something to do with playing the mother figure for the girls as well. But that's probably the best stab I could take at it, because other than that, I have no idea.
Okay, so more of these Paula Carol interactions. You know, their entire back and forth, it's like everything Paula says that Carol doesn't understand, we directly know that Carol does understand. She chose to handle it differently. Paula says, I used to keep a list or account of people I killed. I stopped once they hit double digits. We know Carol's count is at 18, though she probably killed more than 18, but her count is at 18. Now it's at 20. So, no, she does understand. It's like, you don't understand the things I've had to do to survive. Carol took out a whole camp by herself and a whole gang of wolves with one other person, but that person didn't want to kill the wolves. So, Carol does, in fact, understand the things you've done. Just because she doesn't seem okay right now, don't presume that that's because it's soft. She questions how Carol survives that long. Well, Carol survived. The weird thing about that is when she says, how do you survive that long? And Carol just looks at her. I think because the answer is by being like you. But at the same time, I don't want to be like you. And that's a moment that really hit me where it's like, how did you survive this long? Carol just looks at her. It's like, same way you did, but I don't know if I like that.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was interesting how everything that Paula was saying, like, oh, you're weak and all this stuff, is really the complete opposite of what Carol actually is, how Carol has handled herself for these last seasons. So touching on that point, and just, you're right, when she was like, how did you survive? And Carol's like, you know, basically, I am you. And now she's realizing, and that's really what makes her take the step to getting out of this limbo, because she's realizing, damn, I'm you, or I was you a short time ago, and I don't know if I can live with myself being like you are. Now that I'm seeing it in another person and not just trying to analyze myself, I know that this is not how I want to live, even if I am in survival mode.
Right, so these interactions, like I was alluding to earlier, are much more important for Carol, who's still trying to find a resolution, than they are for Maggie, who hasn't resolved anything. So, as we pace through the episode, even another sign that Carol is different, when they get locked in a room and everybody leaves them in the room, you see Maggie instantly trying to find a way out. And Carol doesn't. What that reminded me of, just as a side note, remember when they were locked up in Terminus and instantly they started turning zippers in a change and finding pieces of wood they could carve in the stake and get out? I was like, dang, Carol's not doing that. But then again, she wasn't there at Terminus when they went wild on the Terminus squad and just made ways out. But she doesn't resist being held because she thinks there's a possible better way to do it, which is why she keeps trying to encourage Paula, just take the deal with Rick. Yes, take the deal with Rick, and this could end happily. And that's the part where I think Morgan got to her. Just the sentiment that this doesn't have to end with everybody's blood on the floor.
Yeah, I think that that's where us as the fans will see that she has changed slightly, because old Carol would have been like, you know, whatever, you're about to die anyway. But now she's trying to preserve life instead of just saying, okay, I need to kill you because, again, survival mode. And if you're not about to help me survive, then why are you here? Like other interactions.
When old dude who's bleeding out smacks Paula. And first of all, Maggie was like, don't touch her. My arms and legs tied up. I'm still going to sweep kick you and then kick you again. And Carol went and grabbed. And then after that interaction's over, Paula was like, you shouldn't have interfered. And then Carol is like, my husband used to. And she's like, I don't care about your battered woman story. I could have handled that. That I don't even feel for that dude. He's just someone to keep my bed warm. And I think she meant that. Like, he is just another body to keep my bed warm. I'm in survival mode. I got some needs sometimes. He satisfies those. Only reason I let him get away with that is because he's harmless right now. And I got bigger things to worry about.
Yeah, I definitely think she means it too. She doesn't care. She doesn't care about anything except for surviving. And like you said, you have needs. She had needs. And he fulfilled those needs, and that was really it. But she definitely just did not give a damn.
Yeah, because for a second, Carol thought, you know, this is another way in which we are similar. And she was like, nah, don't get that one twisted. I'm not a battered woman. I wasn't before the fall, but I'm definitely not now. Because I'm stronger. That was another very important thing. When said that she's not a different person. She's still her. She's just stronger. And Carol says, are you sure? That's really the question Carol's dealing with. Because Carol doesn't want to be who she is before the fall. But she doesn't want to be who she was in No Way Out either. So she's stronger now, definitely. But how can she still be the badass who went and took out Terminus and be motherly like the person she pretended to be when they first got to Alexandria, a role she played very well because there was a time where that's who it really was. And how does she balance that? Because balance that, then she is who she really was, but stronger. And I think for a long time, Carol thought she was the same person but stronger. But now sees that she wasn't. You know, she was stuck in survival mode. And I think for a moment, she was trying to get Paula to see that. Like, are you sure you're the same person? Because I don't think you are. I know because I know I'm not the same person I was and I don't like it.
Yeah, I definitely think that she's trying to make Paula reevaluate herself too. And say, okay, she's saying, are you sure? Because she wants to see if Paula will actually realize that she has changed. A lot has changed since the fall. And no one is the same.
Yeah, so it's not even like she had a definite answer for Paula. But I think she had a step in the right direction. Where it's like, you know, I see you're very close to me. If we can see that we've changed. I'm still trying to figure this out. Maybe we can figure this out together. And Paula is not biting. She's like, I'm in charge of this. I'm handling this hostage situation. I am who I am now. Get over it. And the crazy thing about Paula is, given more time with Paula on this earth, maybe she could have turned around. Maybe her and Carol could have been biffles. But the world denies us that chance. And I think that's where Paula has a similarity to the Alpha Wolf, because what Carol saw is, I think after talking to Neeson, it could have came around, it's like, but we'll never know. This time, Carol was like, I don't think I want to not know, because I definitely see myself in this person, and if I can be saved, there's a possibility that she can be saved. And I think that's why she was avoiding it this episode.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't really think about it that much. So that's why she was trying so hard not to want to kill everyone. Kind of, well, the exact opposite of Maggie.
Like, look, Maggie, I got a baby.
Was like, yeah, everyone needs to die before we leave.
I understand that. I was like, I got a baby. I'm not taking chances.
Right.
Carol and religion, her rosary. You want to talk a little bit about her and her rosary, which was something that if she's been carrying it around a long time, I've been missing it, and I kind of want to go back and see if that lies anywhere around.
Yeah, I'm not sure when she got that or where she got it from, who she got it from. I feel like I pay attention to Carol because she's one of my favorite characters and I haven't ever seen her with that. So it's definitely making me want to do a little research to see when she got that. But her using the rosary for her to calm herself down in when she was hyperventilating, that whole scene, the whole hyperventilating when they first got there and being held captive and her praying, even though I'm not entirely sure if she was, like, when you hold a rosary, are you praying, or are you just holding it just to ask for God's help? But regardless, her using her faith in religion, which I'm not sure if she had one before. I just don't
So,
know where this came from.
to rationalize this in my mind, I figured you could peg it two ways. Whether or not she's religious, it gave us an object to talk about faith, where even though she says faith helped her get through the death of her daughter, I feel more turning cold helped her get through the death of her daughter. And faith is what she had to keep going in a situation she was in, because she was beaten by her husband, and they strongly implied that her husband used to rape her daughter. And she stayed with Ed and had faith that it would get better. So there was a time where she had faith, and the world made her lose that faith. And now, even though she doesn't have a resolve, she has faith that it could be better again. So even if she wasn't religious, it was still a good talisman to represent faith. And if she was, then somebody might go back and find it, and we might stand corrected. T-Hawk fans, if you are out there and you see other moments where they show that Carol may have been religious or Carol has carried this rosary before, go ahead and add us on Twitter at ComicileT-Hawks or shoot us an email at comicileteahawks@gmail.com. We'll credit you with the correction, give you a shout out. But it's crazy because the end of the episode, she is clenching the rosary until she bleeds, which tells you what kind of state she's in. She's like, I just want to know this is all going to work out. I still had to turn around and kill two people. And at the end of her interactions with Paula, Paula is like, if you can do all of this, what were you so afraid of? And she was like, I was afraid of this, as in afraid of having to kill you. It's crazy. And the rosary was a nice tie into that, because actually this season has used Christianity and the Bible a lot to justify or to let some behind the scenes themes come into play.
Yeah, they have. And I definitely think that her showing faith and getting out of the situation with doubt, well, she was really trying to not kill anyone, really trying to just stay positive about, okay, maybe they can be saved, maybe they can. Was really, and her just really trying to hold on to that faith before being forced to really kill people. Just shows strength within Carol because she's really trying, she's really going through this internal battle right now, and her seeing Paula and seeing so much of herself in Paula just made that battle even worse, as we've said multiple times during this episode. So her showing her face and her, like you said, her clenching that rosary until she bled, really just shows how much faith she wanted to have that it was all going to end well.
Think there's a note where Carol gets a glimpse of what she should be when she doesn't hesitate to pull the trigger when Shell is about to kill Maggie. We don't exactly know how Maggie got out of the room with Shell, but Shell comes back furious and she calls Maggie a lying bitch. So I don't know what Maggie said to get out of that room, but she got out of the room with nobody getting hurt, in a way that was probably deceitful. And Shell probably wandered the warehouse and found Malls with her head bashed in with the blunt end of a gun. How did Carol even, I mean, how did Maggie even get a gun? But, yeah, Shell wasn't a happy camper. And Carol was like, push come to shove, you're not hurting this baby. Blam, one right through the head.
Right, but then when it came to Paula, there was much hesitation. So much hesitation that she
almost got bit by a walker. For a second. I think my tweet at that moment was like, Carol, no! Because with this talk that somebody had to die, that one was very unexpected, especially since you just walked me through her. And I already don't know about the Alpha Wolf. You telling me I'm not going to find out about somebody else? But yeah, Maggie had her back. Maggie had her back with a second gunshot, too, into Paula's shoulder. And, you know, you see how ruthless Carol can be, because when they're fighting, Carol uses the wound in her shoulder to gain advantage. They're in a pretty even struggle, and she's like, well, if I apply pressure right here, all right, I'll throw you on that now. So, if we got no more on their direct interactions, I want to talk about Maggie and Carol's resolve at the end of the episode. If you're all clear on interactions.
So, I'm all clear.
I think I had another series of tweets where you had two very powerful statements between Maggie and Glenn and between Carol and Daryl, where, first of all, once Carol hit that mode, she hit that mode because the kill room where she burnt those dudes by dropping a cigarette, that was badass and cool and probably what the Twitterverse was waiting for Carol to do other episodes. But Daryl asked her, is she okay? And she says no. And it's a moment where, for a first time in forever, Carol feels like she can be herself, but now she has to rediscover who she is. I don't think it was specifically a threat on her life that she was worried about her life, that she wasn't okay. She's not okay because she's not sure how to be anymore. She's not sure what's right because she was just in a situation where she looked at two extremes. Neither of them looked good. Yeah, I think I touched a little bit on all the things running through her mind right now. And though it might not seem like the situation, in some ways the situation made it harder because I think for a moment she looks at Paula and was like, I don't need to be like Paula. That extreme is out the window. But then when she had the kill, she is like, well, I'm not about to turn around and be like Morgan either. That extreme's out the window. So where on the spectrum is the right point on the spectrum?
Yeah, exactly. She definitely needs to find her happy medium, so to speak, to find her spot on the spectrum, because she already knows she can't be like Morgan, and she knows that she doesn't want to end up like Paula. So these next couple of episodes, I hope that they don't just put Carol on the back burner and have us thinking about what's going on with her, because I think that it's a really awesome story that is developing within Carol, and just her trying to figure out who she wants to be in this new world, because everything is different. Nothing really is the same. So yeah, I'm definitely excited and hopeful that they actually do keep the story at least somewhat tied into Carol in these next couple of episodes.
Yeah, and Maggie, my back-to-back tweets were like a whoa, because I didn't expect that from Maggie. So Carol telling Daryl no, she's not okay, was a strong moment, but it was one you expected following the whole episode. Glenn hugged Maggie, asked Maggie if she's alright, and Maggie's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Which, you know, Maggie has made her choice, and though we saw her act badass this entire episode, though she volunteered to come on this mission and go take out some saviors, she says she doesn't want to do this anymore. So Maggie has made a choice toward humanity, and she wants to keep moving in that direction as opposed toward the other direction.
Yeah, and I think that that's where she needs to start going, especially with her. If they want to keep this child and her there's no keeping a child when they are out fighting, when she's out fighting, really. If they want to move towards humanity, then they have to take the right steps to do that. So staying in Alexandria was a good step for that. The next step is really necessity. So was it necessary for Maggie to go? The answer is no. It was never necessary for her to go. Maybe for the negotiation with the Hilltop, yes?
But yeah, she didn't need to go to war. What I think Carol can take note of is looking at some of the stronger, more versatile members of Rick's squad. She's going to talk to Daryl next episode, but I don't know if Daryl has the life mode thing down the same way some of the others do. Because Daryl, pre-fall, he's always had to fight to survive also. But if you look at Maggie, when she hugs Glenn, her survival mode instantly shuts off. Like, it's a place that she can go, but a place she doesn't like to go. Michonne has already made a similar statement where she was in the woods by herself with two decapitated walkers. Michonne never was to go back to that place. But if someone needs to die, Michonne gets there real quick, you know, next to the decapitated head. Even Rick never turns it all the way off. But if the dude would have ratted out Negan, I don't know if Rick shoots him real quick. Which is why, when right before Rick shoots him, he's like, I'm sorry, it has to be this way. Then click, click, bang, bang. Carol needs to know that she can be different ways at different moments and still be the same person. Because you don't have to wander in the extremes. You know there's a moment where they say the phrases, we all have to wear different hats at different times. I think Carol has to learn that, as well as Morgan. Morgan has to learn that. And they'll find out and figure out where they need to be.
Definitely.
Okay, so closing out back on Rick and his click and bang, they ask, what's that dude's name? They said the dude's name. I think it starts with an I. They ask him who Negan is. And they say something that Maul says early in the episode, we're all Negan. And I think it speaks to the power that this guy has. Apparently it was a comic book thing. We all know Negan's a person because the internet couldn't stop raving after he casted. But to have a code and a pull on these people so strong that they say we are all Negan in the face of death, in the face of certain death, in the face of maybe this gets me out of it. Even Maul says it like they're so stupid when Maggie's like, who is Negan? And she's like, ah, you stupid, stupid little girl. We're all Negan. I think it's an interesting hold that the group, that the Saviors has, where they divulge the name of their leader, but then choose to say that they are all their leader.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, I feel like I would, the way I'm going to interpret this is that anyone could potentially be Negan when Negan is not around. So prime example, Paula became the leader when everything happened because of Rick's squad, right? But they know that when Negan shows up, everyone will follow behind Negan.
Interesting interpretation. Something to look out for, because Negan is coming in pieces and riddles that they've got to figure out. Another thing I want to note about the Saviors is they have multiple locations. They took them to an off-site safe house, and it wasn't just some place they found. It was a place that they had marked as their territory, because Paula asked Maul's where the food and the supplies are, and all this, like, that's all been raided. And she's like, ah, for Christ's sake, when's the last time someone came in to check on this place? And they're like, well, about a month ago. So in that month, somebody ran up in their space and took their crap. But I think the importance in that scene was to note that they have more than one location, even if it's not their main location. You know, I don't think they're decentralized. I think where they raided was their main place, but they have other locations they can go to for different things if needed. And this is where they want to hold people hostage and kill people.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good point. Good thing to point out. They saying that, you know, the people from the hilltop took them there, expecting that to be their only camp. We all expected it to be their only camp, but we're not. We're really understanding how large the Saviors group is, because of this multiple camps. Because this might be Beta One. There might be another camp, maybe 3 miles south, 3 miles east. So you're really getting to understand how large they are potentially, and if this was just one of the smaller scale ones too. Because when I think of having multiple camps, I'm thinking, okay, you have a safe house here, a safe house there, but the base is where the majority of the people lie.
Yeah, I don't even think Negan escaped the night they went and raided that place. I don't think he was ever there. And I think he's aware of Rick Squad now because at least one of the people who got out that night went to report directly to him.
Yeah, I don't think that. Yeah, I think that Negan knows. Negan definitely knows about Rick Squad now. He might not know where they're from or anything, but he definitely knows that they're there and they are a threat to the Saviors.
If Rick is really smart,
And I
I'm
don't.
hoping they don't get followed back. If Rick is really smart, they take some scenic route, send people out to scout every now and then, just to make sure their tracks are covered.
Yeah, hopefully Maggie or Carol tells them that someone else was there, someone else came, and they might have been followed by another group. They might have been split up, something, because yeah, they could easily get tracked back if they're not careful.
Yeah, Rick, barging up in there was a mistake. I'ma call it now. It's a mistake, and in some way, shape, or form, someone is going to pay.
Yeah, for sure. Something will happen within these next couple episodes.
Yeah, shout out to the way this episode was filmed and directed, where once they were in there, the only time you heard from outside was through the walkie-talkie and through Carol's walkie-talkie. So before those gates open at the end, you as a viewer really get a sense that they're trapped in this warehouse because you don't see the outside world at all. You see the light of day through foggy windows in the room Maggie and Shell was in, but they set it up really good where you as a viewer feel like you're trapped in there with them. So I like to give directorial credit where it's due. And Paula's actress, Alicia something, and she did Alicia Witt. She did a killer job. Like I just said, I want to see the Fear of the Walking Dead episodes where Paula has to kill her boss and eventually winds up with the Saviors because that joint will be lit. I'm gonna go ahead and tweet at the Walking Dead writers and tell them I want this to happen.
I'm for it. I'm behind you 100%.
Is that all we got for today?
I think so.
All right, Comicidal fans, as I said in the middle of the episode, but I will reiterate again, catch us on our email at homicidalthawks@gmail.com, or go ahead and find us on Twitter at homicidalthawks. We've got some more locations and things coming to you in the near future as our consistent podcast goes forward to try to find other ways of consistency. So we've got new podcast hosts coming out at you soon. Websites, be on the lookout. If you are in the Philadelphia area, go to Amalgam Comics this weekend. Head to the Blackfinity Gauntlet. Al Wilson told you that he's going to be out there. Some other crew members are going to be out there with other black podcasts. We are going to meet and discuss the state of our industry and being. Heisen, you're going out there too, right?
Yes, I will be there. I will be taking a break from a wedding venue, hunting and getting my nerd on in the middle of the day.
So yeah, Kamisayo fanboys and fangirls, you can meet Kaizen and RP Wilson themselves. I believe Zenarium will be out there as well. So you could go ahead and meet some of the crew. I am based out of not near Philly right now, so I unfortunately will not be in attendance. But Blackfinity, Gauntlet, Amalgam Comics, Philadelphia, comic shop and coffee house owned by a black female, first one in the area. So even if you can't check out Blackfinity Gauntlet, check out Amalgam Comics. As always, I am Lucius Illuminix, and since this is The Walking Dead, I have with me,
Your girl
and
Kaven.
this was The Walking Dead Season 6, Episode 13, The Same Boat. Peace.